you know, I'll be meditating, and there'll be times when I'd have these amazing experiences, and I just wanted to be in this experience, and I would go, oh, I must be in this jhana, that jhana, this jhana. And then in the end, I just thought, I still haven't actually been a better person. And that's, I'm sure the Buddha, when he wanted to share his teachings, the idea is for this is for us to be better people. And the mystical side of it, or the magical side of it, is irrelevant if you're not a better person.
Precisely so. That's the teaching of the Buddha, that in fact, the jhanas he did before he was enlightened, because he was on the wrong path. He was on the path that everybody told him to be on. And then, after he figured out that the jhanas, even though he could have deep experiences and whatnot with jhanas and whatnot, he still, as you say, after he comes out of those jhanas, is still not a better person. He still suffers. He still hurts. So he then went to start practicing austerities, and the belief in those days was that, oh, this by the way is Jain, the modern Jains, okay? All right. And do you know anything about them? Because there's a few Jains in Sri Lanka.
Well, I did a bit of traveling around India, and I came across a few Jains, and they make sure when they're sweeping the concrete, they're not killing ants and they're all of that stuff.
Wearing masks so that they don't
Masks,
breathe in little things. They take a broom and sweep the dirt, the sweep the paths that they're going on. Okay, so they're very careful about not killing and other things, because they actually then say that our behavior is perfect. Okay, so now we're going back to the issue of the law of karma. If you do good, you'll get good results, and if you do bad, you'll get bad results. And here the Jains are with absolutely, in their minds, perfect behavior, and they still feel bad. Okay, and so the idea then came is that, oh, we are still having to put up with, I'll use the word suffering quickly, they have to put up with the results of old bad actions, because their current and just in this life, previous bad actions have been nothing, that they've had all good actions, and yet they still are disappointed. Therefore, this is where the austerities come in. Oh, if I go ahead and hurt myself and give myself all of the results of that bad karma, I can burn it off very quickly. Right? But in fact, in this regard, what that means is by practicing austerities, including putting fish hooks in the body, flagellating oneself with chains or whips or whatever like that, is new bad action giving immediate new bad results. It's not a good action getting rid of old bad feelings. It's creating new feelings. And the Buddha figured that out, but he went to the absolute end of their practice with the guy's name was Mahabir. In the time of the Buddha, he was known as Naka-Nakaputta, which meant in
So do you think, because you've, through with your, extensive understanding of, with everything we have, I think, we have this ment I have this mental image of the Buddha as being, when I first heard about him, he was, the word enlightened, he was this enlightened, mystical figure that can do that. Just the word enlightened comes up. He knew everything about everything regarding the universe,
All
right?
right. Now, here's the point. Okay, there's many little details in that magical thinking quality. One of them is a loka vidu. Loka vidu means knower of the world. But the Visuddhimagga goes so far as to say the Buddha has every fish named. Which is ridiculous, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when the Buddha knows the world, that means he knows that it's dangerous. He knows that people are creating dukkha and then having to put up with the dukkha that they create. That's the world. That's the world of politics. They harm each other.
And this sort of discourse that we have, me and you, and you with other students, you know, in all reality, is this just it's just we're playing into this game of, you know, constantly trying to seek validation, where at the ultimately it's just really about, you know,
Exactly. Okay, just let me interrupt there right now. We're constantly seeking validation, right? But we seek it in all the wrong places. It's almost like the same as the song, looking for love in all the wrong places, looking for love. You've heard that song maybe, okay? Yeah. Which is another way of saying looking for validation. And what we actually have to do instead, in order to get validation, is to create it for ourselves.
But if I was being very serious about
go ahead.
if I was being very serious about this journey I'm on, mm-hmm. if I was being very serious and truthful to myself about being on this path, I was thinking about this the other day. I would stop having these conversations, and I would just go out to the wilderness and live by myself.
A lot of people do that, and a lot of them die miserably. That's not enough, because we leave the world and go into the wilderness, or go into a cave, or go up into the mountain place where they've done that many times before. And we take our crap with us. Okay. A very funny example of that, this happened, it's a story, because it happened to a Westerner who had stayed in Dhammasala long enough to really get into Tibetan Buddhism. And so he did one of the, I forgot the term for it, but he goes off into seclusion for 3 years. Okay, he goes. You've probably heard about this.
I know that they do practice a 3-year solitary retreat, but not
right. Story. Okay, yeah. And some of the places they have are absolutely spectacular. They're carved out of mountains, and they go to the window, and it is a spectacular view. It's quite beautiful, and they get food, they get fed every day, et cetera, like that. So at the end of this journey that this guy was on, spending 3 years in that cave, they go to get him to bring him back down to Dhammasala. He gets into the car. It's a mountain journey, bumpy roads. I remember, in fact, I was thinking about this just yesterday, because my family took me to see a construction site, and there we were on that bouncy dirt road, and I could say, I can handle this, I can handle this. But this monk that we're talking about, who spent 3 years in solitude, he gets into that car down the bumpy road, and he can't handle it. He gets out of the car and goes back. He walks back up the hill to go back to his camp, because he can't tolerate riding in a bumpy car. He did not learn anything in 3 years.
Yeah.
That, in fact, all kinds of people in India ride in bumpy transportation, and they're just fine.
Yeah,
Yeah, but he couldn't handle it because he had gotten used to having stillness, and so he wasn't able to handle Bumpy.
But this is, but you know, that just reminds me so much of how you can just follow, you just go down this wrong path, or you're wanting something more than what is actually really what it's all about.
Validation.
Yeah. But but just imagine if the Pali Sutras or the Buddha had said, look, this is simply about becoming a better person. Mm-hmm. You know, this is what it's about. It's about being a better person. This is the practice I have laid out. And if you follow this path, if you follow this path, hopefully, if you do it the correct way, you will find some benefit and you'll gain some benefits out of it and be happier. But, but because they had the word enlightenment in it, everyone's going, I want that enlightenment. I don't want to be a better person. I want to be the superhuman being, the enlightenment.
Well, wait a minute. Isn't an enlightened person a better person?
But that's not enough for some people.
Well,
they think enlightenment.
They don't even have good enough. They're not even a better person, and they're wanting enlightenment. That's like somebody who has not learned to read, has a book, and he wants to go steal the library.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's all desire. It's wanting something that we don't have.
Yeah.
And so we're wanting something out there, and then somebody comes by and whistles the word enlightenment, and now they want that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now let's go back to the point about a better person. The reason why you want to be a better person has because you have been taught that you're not good enough yet. And you believe that you're not a good enough person yet.
Mm. Yeah, and
now, wait a minute, let me finish. Yeah. If you could feel that you were already okay, that you were good enough, that you were satisfied with your existence, then would you then want enlightenment?
But I don't, but the thing is,
without even knowing what it is, we're talking about being satisfied. You are satisfied, you're content, you decide that you are a good enough person. In other words, you've started to nourish yourself rather than being critical, because not being good enough is another way of saying that you're critical of yourself. You find faults with yourself.
But the thing is, when we last spoke, you actually put me off enlightenment, because you mentioned as an arahant you just don't care anymore,
right? Which means that he's already good enough.
Yeah,
he's already okay.
But if everything's okay and it's good enough, there's nothing else.
Yeah. So just enjoy life. Just begin to play because it's good enough. Your toys are good enough.
I hear you. Yeah. But you don't need
anything else. The arahant doesn't need to be an arahant.
The next question I have then is, if everything is good enough, right? If everything is good enough, is there anything else apart from that in what the Buddha taught?
You answer that for yourself. You get to yourself to the point that you're good enough.
Yeah.
And then you'll say, well, what is it that I want after that? And now you're back not good enough again.
That's so true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You see the dilemma in that? So when you get good enough, then that's good enough. There is anything that you would want after that means that now you're not good enough again, because being good enough wasn't good enough after all.
So is it a case of fake it till you make it?
Actually, that's we can see it in two ways. One is seeing it in the charlatan's way of faking it. Like, and you see that the guy who wants magic winds up learning how to do magic tricks. Okay. And there are two kinds of magicians then. One of them is that he does card tricks, he does tarot readings, he does magic shows, and he knows that everybody knows that it's a trick. But he will not reveal the trick unless there are certain kinds. Now, Penn and Teller were the kind of magicians that after they performed the magic trick, then they would show how it was done.
Yes.
All right. Mm. Other magicians will do the magic trick and then don't show how it's done. In fact, one of the guys that was in that realm, he was in Las Vegas doing magic tricks with lions or tigers or tiger, and one of them bit him. Okay, so much for his magic trick. Now there's the other kind of magic trick, and that is the charlatan. The charlatan, the card reader that reads the fortune tellers and that kind of stuff, they make money off of making you believe that they know something you don't know, when all they do know is how to shuffle cards.
Mm.
Yeah. Preachers are like that. Priests are like that. Gurus are like that.
Yeah.
All right. They all want you to believe that they're special and that you need something from them. That's how they make their living. So fake it until you make it is two different kinds. One is the faking it and everybody knows it's a fake, but it's at least entertaining. And then the other fake is the one who is faking it and he never makes it. Okay, so now let's train that and twist it around just a little bit. And that is practice makes perfect. It's not a matter of faking it, it's a matter of practicing. So the guys who do the magic tricks, they have to practice that over and over again of how to palm cards in their hands so that nobody sees that he's, even though he's shuffling that deck, he still puts the card he wants right back on top of the deck because he's got it hidden in his hand while he's shuffling. Yeah. And that kind of stuff. Okay, so that takes practice, but it's still a magic trick and everybody knows it. Okay. So now let's understand in reality is that the Buddha has a magic trick. And what are we going to do? We're going to palm that card. And what is that card that we're palming? Happiness, joy, mm-hmm. nurturing, wholesomeness. And while we're shuffling the deck of the world, we keep that card on top in the palm of our hand. What is that card again? Wholesomeness, joy, happiness. So that you can go out and shuffle the world around and you still always come up with the card on top of I'm okay. I'm all right.
Okay, so an example of that is I wake up in the morning today. And, you know, for some reason, I wake up, my mood is down. I don't know why.
Well, it doesn't matter what reason, but there's many different possibilities. One is that you didn't eat the right thing last night. Number two, there was dirt in the bed and you didn't notice it, but you were uncomfortable. Number three, you were going to sleep having thoughts of all the work you've got to do, and you dreamt your way through the night without actually getting good rest. And so you wake up in the morning in a grumpy mood.
Exactly. So I then recognize that, okay, not feeling joyful, wholesome. I'm in this sort of funny mood. I'm going to recognize it, and then I'm going to, you know,
I'm going to cheer myself up right now. I'm going to take a few deep breaths and come out of the tiredness. And I'm going to look at the day like, wow, we're going to have a good day today.
Yeah.
That's that calming of that card of the joy. Even though you wake up with a whole 51 card deck of dissatisfaction when you wake up, you still have that one card left to remember that you're in control of your life, to remember that you can feel good, to remember that you can change your attitude from being, oh, I didn't have a good night's sleep, into, I can handle this. I could do it.
Right. Right. So that process, or that whatever I did, and whatever you're saying, that's not faking it till you're making it. That is practicing it.
Practicing over and over again. Over. Practicing being able to palm that card. What card are we're palming? We're the King of Spades or the Ace of Spades. I'm the Emperor here. I can handle this. Yeah. So what if the body's tired? I'll handle it.
And that goes back to what you said before, when the Buddha, Mara, I see you.
Uh-huh. Mara, I see you.
Okay. Okay.
Uh-huh. And this, in this case of Mara, I see you, is I see that I've woken up tired. And I see that. And I can change it. I can shuffle that deck again and put the Ace of Spades right back on top.
Mm. Yeah.
Because I have practiced and I have remembered. And what have I practiced? Wholesome thoughts. Holding wholesome thoughts, keeping the mind wholesome. And one of the most important wholesome thoughts is everything's okay. Everything is fine. Not a worry in the world.
Ooh.
I don't have magic, but I don't need magic because I know how to palm cards. And a lot of people call that magic, but at best, it's just a magic trick. And what is the trick? Being happy. No matter what goes down. And so it is possible for somebody to call themselves enlightened or call themselves an arahat, but then they still have moments, maybe hours, maybe whole days of not liking something. But if we have that one magic trick, it doesn't even matter whether we use the label that I'm enlightened or I'm an arahat. What we really have is the ability to change our mind right now. Aha, I see that, Myra, and out it goes.
So why then the, because that's a practice that it doesn't matter if you're a lay person or you're a monk, it doesn't matter, but why
well, it does in a way that if you're a lay person and you're out in the world, everybody there is not practicing, and so they see it as magic. But you get around the noble monks who know how to practice correctly, and they can help you practice.
But
it's just like going and living with a master magician who can free you from the lies you've been told by showing you the trick. And so becoming a monk is really, really valuable if you are with the right monks.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. But then, you know, because I always, you know, had this thought in my head that to really follow the path of Buddhism, you had to become ordained as a monk. Otherwise, you're just wasting your time.
There are some advantages to that. Mm. But you can, in practice right now, good enough. Are the clothes that you're wearing good enough? Because a lot of people will change their clothes to orange and they still don't feel good enough.
Yeah.
It's not the clothes you wear. It's your attitude. Are you good enough?
Yeah.
Are you okay? Are you good enough? Are you satisfied? Do you have everything that your little heart desires? Because the heart doesn't desire anything now. We stop desiring.
But knowing how crafty the mind is, how do you know whether you are good enough, you're doing it right, or your mind is deceiving you by telling you you're good enough, Rosh?
Because you of the way you feel. You've got to change the mind, thoughts. You got to change the mind, attitude. From the, I might be deceiving myself because I'm still a victim. We change that attitude into, I can do it. I know I can do it. We change the way we feel from being anxious and afraid and maybe I'm lying to myself into, hot dog, I feel good. And then we can change the body from being tense and uptight into being completely relaxed.
Yeah.
That's the four foundations of mindfulness right there. I just went through them. The four foundations of mindfulness, or the Anapanasati, is that we change the thoughts, we change our attitude, we change the way we feel, and we change the body into relaxed. We change the feelings into feeling good and confident. Not special, just good enough. We change the attitude from being the attitude of a victim into the attitude of being the boss, being a winner, being an emperor of our own pile of dirt. Not buried under our pile of dirt, not clawing our way out of the pile of dirt, but the attitude of sitting on top of the pile, being on top of the world. This is the Lokottara, or in English, we would say the supramundane. We're above all the mundane. What is the mundane? Oh, I'm not good enough.
Yeah.
Oh, I must be lying to myself. Okay, so we change all of the aspects of us, so that we do have the right attitude, we have the right thoughts, we have the right kind of feelings, feeling good enough, and the body is relaxed and comfortable. What else is there? And all
there's nothing
that,
else.
In fact, at one time I gave a talk to a group of students about the best things in life are free. The very best things in life are free. For having a positive attitude, that's free. Feeling comfortable and safe and secure, that's free. Breathing air, keep breathing, it's free. You don't have to pay a toll or a tax or buy your air. You can just breathe.
But
your
also
thoughts are free. Why don't have excellent thoughts? Why have expensive, poor thoughts when we can have really cheap, high-quality thoughts?
And there's this thing, and I get it. And there's this thing though, which is curiosity. And there's also this thing like where,
curiosity is different than doubt. Doubt's expensive. Doubt is I don't know what to do. Doubt is I'm afraid. Doubt is I'm unsure of myself. Curiosity is just taking that doubt and adding a great big dollop of joy, of playfulness on top of it, and then it becomes curiosity. And now I can go and be curious. I can go investigate. I could go have fun discovering, as opposed to going through life full of trepidation. I might step on the wrong thing.
So in that case, then, you know, why, again, you know, I'm thinking of it's when you have this curious mind, you know, we're somehow on this planet, we're spinning around the sun.
But that's just a concept. The question is, can you spin around or not in a concept and still be okay with it, because there's an awful lot of humans on this planet that are spinning around the planet and they don't like a whole lot of stuff.
They don't. But, you know, if I would, you know, like, I'm just thinking that the curiosity in me goes, you know, I'm confident in my practice that over time you know, I'm bringing myself back to it's good enough. I'm happy and joyful. Life is good enough. And it definitely is. Life is good enough. And then there's this curiosity that also is in my head going, well, how the hell did we, how did this all happen? You know, where, why and how and, you know, and again, but then that, you know what that tells me? I'm not back into that place.
Right. Of, okay.
Of not good enough.
Well, that's exactly right. Have you ever heard of the four imponderables?
No.
All right. There are four imponderables. What does that mean? It means it doesn't matter how much you think about it, you're not going to get an answer. And what you're talking about here is basically, how did all this happen? How did it get started? And you've got philosophers and you've got Christians who read books and make stuff up, and you have physicists who look through telescopes and see what's out there, and then they make stuff up, and then they get into an argument about how things got started. Guess what? I wasn't there. I don't know, and I don't care. I don't care how things got started. All I need is right now is good enough.
Yeah. Well, that to me, when you're at that point, that to me tells me you're at that, you're at a high level of practice, because I think the human mind, we're
maybe I'm at a point where practice is irrelevant. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Practice is, in fact, once you're good at something, it doesn't matter how you practiced.
Yeah.
And so what we need to be good at is being happy.
Yes.
Being satisfied.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how you got there.
Yeah.
You can do Tibetan, you can do medical doctor stuff, you can ride a motorcycle. The fact, you know, that some people get great joy out of riding motorcycles. But then why do we have Hell's Angels and motorcycle gangs? When they get off their motorbikes, they're not happy at all. They want to have a bar fight.
True.
So that's, let's do things. Yeah, so let's do stuff that gets us happy, but we can sustain that happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't, if riding a motorcycle makes you happy, you can't ride a motorcycle all the time. You got to stop for gas.
Yeah.
Okay. The question is, can you sit on the toilet and feel happy?
Yeah.
You don't give a shit even while you're giving one. To learn to be happy and sustain that happiness, to sustain, and I'm using the word happiness now, but there's a lot of words that are in that realm. Happiness, joy, satisfaction, contentment, successful. And those words run and circle around each other.
Ooh.
And that we can bring that state of mind in. We can change our attitude. We can change the way we feel. We can relax the body. We can have wholesome thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we have to practice at it. Because we're already in the habit of being critical. We're in the habit of being worried. We're in the habit of asking questions. We're in the habit of doubt rather than curiosity. Let's add that joy to the doubt. Let's add that happiness to the doubt. Let's add that satisfaction to the doubt. And then it becomes curiosity.
Ooh.
And now we can investigate. That's the only way to dispel curiosity, is by investigation.
But those questions, the four what did you call them again? The four
imponderables.
Imponderables, sorry. They That can never, what you're saying is there is no answer to those things. Doesn't that, I mean, from a personal point of view, like, I'm just, again, a bit of curiosity here. Does that not ever come across your mind? Like, you know, even this, like, you know, it almost feels like a dream sometimes. I mean, even this communication, like the fact that I'm talking to you, you're talking to me, you know, we're in this realm. It just feels like sometimes it just doesn't even feel real.
Are you asking how the internet works? We can spend 4 or 5 hours and I can explain how the internet works, down to how cameras work, how to charge couple devices work.
I hear what you're saying. Yeah.
Okay, guess what? You don't need to know any of that to be happy.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't have to know how IP addresses work because we've got URLs. You don't have to know how URLs create an IP address. We'll let that happen. That's just an algorithm someplace.
Yeah.
Cisco learned to do that.
So true. Yeah.
And it works, so it doesn't need me.
Yeah.
Isn't that marvelous? IP addresses are free. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to worry about how the website works. We don't have to worry about any of that stuff. We can just enjoy.
Yeah. Just enjoy and why, and then just enjoy and no need to ask why.
No need for why questions.
Yeah.
Because there's no end to the why questions. And the why questions keep us dissatisfied.
Yeah.
Let me add one little thing to it. For a yes or no kind of question, you've heard lawyers say, give me a yes or no, right?
Right.
You've heard physicists and teachers, a yes or no question. All yes or no questions have 6 answers. They don't always have just the 2 answers, yes or no. Almost always, there's something in the middle, in the sense of both. It's halfway between this and halfway between that. This is the Buddha's middle path. And then we have the 4th one, which is, it's neither one. Is it black or white? No, it's got no color at all. It's transparent. Okay, so it's neither one. That's 4 of them. The 5th answer is kind of an important one, and that is, I don't know. The answer to the question is beyond my ability to answer it. Like, how did things begin? Was it a big bang? Was it a constant big bang? Are there multiverses? The answer to that kind of stuff is, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then the 6th answer is the big one. And that is, it's irrelevant. How the Big Bang or whatever happened in the beginning is irrelevant to what's going on now. It didn't matter how things started. It didn't matter who invented electricity. In fact, it wasn't an invention. It's always been there. Lightning storms are old. Fire is old. What we learn to do is to control it. But who and what? There's a whole long line of people. You know, there's Faraday and Morris and Boyle and all kinds of guys. And all the way back to something was able to control fire. He picked up a stick. Now, here's something that's kind of unusual. We know that the fire and the ability to control fire predates humanity. Humans, when they came along, came along because they were developed through the lineage of folks who could control fire. For instance, great apes have big jaw muscles.
Yeah.
Well, if they had fire and cooked their food, then that meant that the fire did a lot of the work and they didn't have to chew and chew and chew and chew. And so we developed as humans because we already had fire. We developed as humans because of the brain, because we already had the digestive system that was able to get the food digested, because it was already partially digested with fire. Now that's logic, because I wasn't there. I didn't discover fire, but I know that whoever did discover fire wasn't human. That discovery of fire was part of the process that created humanity.
Ooh, right. Yeah. All right?
But yeah. I wasn't there. I don't know. I don't care. Maybe it was some terrestrial being that came down and gave monkeys fire. Maybe we were fully developed as humans and got fire. We don't know and we don't care. We can use fire now. So that's six ways to answer a question. Who made fire? I don't know. I don't care. It was human. It was not human. It was both human and not human. And I don't know. And I don't care.
Yeah. But
now, if we can understand it that way, why don't we start looking, instead of getting yes or no answers to questions, why don't we go to the fifth and sixth one? I don't know and I don't care. If we can stay in I don't know and I don't care, that puts us very easily, very comfortably back to I'm okay with it. I'm satisfied.
But that
I don't
also
have to know how things started. I don't care.
But that also suggests living blissfully ignorant.
Well,
because it's
blissfully ignorant, so long as we're ignorant, is blissful. Let us say that you've got a tiger stalking you and you don't know it, so ignorance is bliss. But then you do find out when you're being eaten that the tiger was stalking you. Knowledge then was very dangerous. So long as the tiger is just stalking you and you don't know it, you're okay. Knowledge, in fact, is dangerous.
But if you had knowledge, wouldn't you, when you're walking in that, you wouldn't be blissful because you'd be aware that something could come and eat me.
Right. Okay. So now we are, let us say that it's not a tiger now who's chewing on us. It's our trip to the bank.
Right.
Oh, I've got to go get a loan. Maybe they'll give me the loan. Maybe they won't give me the loan. Oh, I need that loan. Okay, so now the bank is eating us, and
yeah,
we know
yeah.
it. All right. Yeah. Can we say, I don't know whether the bank's going to give me a loan or not, and I don't care right now. I'm okay. Later, I'll go to the bank and find out for sure. But right now, I don't know, and that's blissful.
Got you. Yeah. 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 But I mean, you know, logic says that if I'm coming to see you in Thailand, and to get to you, I'm walking through a forest, then obviously I'm going to be aware of, you know, my unfamiliar surroundings. But
can you be happy even though you never get to me? You just continue to walk in the forest. You see. The point is that you wanted something, you wanted to come visit me, and you don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
So basically, then, that's the same thing, is that you want to be happy, but you don't know how to do it.
Say that again? I didn't quite understand that part.
So you were walking in the forest, and you were happy, except that you want to come visit me. And so you're in the forest. You're not blissfully ignorant of coming to see me. because you want something. Well, is it the wanting that causes you discomfort, or is it walking in the forest that's causing discomfort?
Okay, so if I said it was walking, it was both, but at that moment,
walking in the forest is bliss. It's ignorant. You wanted something. That's what's causing you the trouble. Why? What's wrong with walking in the forest? Why do you have to come see Damarato? He's just going to tell you to go enjoy walking in the forest anyway.
What I'm saying is that when I'm walking blissfully in the forest, all of a sudden I hear a sound, and I'm thinking, oh, that could be one of those tigers they've been talking about, or a snake. And suddenly I go from blissful to being aware and scared that something's going to attack me.
Okay. But let us say aware and scared and now dead. If you're okay in dying, then there was no problem.
Ah, right. Yeah, because it's good enough.
Things are good enough. Okay, in fact, there is a sutta about a monk who did get caught by a lion. And while the lion was eating his legs, he became a sotapan. And when it got up to his waist, he was an amigami. And then he died as an arahat. I'm going to die anyway. Why not enjoy it?
I can't believe he was not screaming and going.
Well, see, clinging to life itself and saying that it's better to be alive. But most people are alive and they're not enjoying being alive.
Yeah, true.
So what's the point? Being in fact, life itself is a free gift. We've got it. But we're not enjoying it, most people. They say, oh, my life is not good enough. I need a Mercedes, too.
Yeah. But the pain, you know, the pain that monk went through.
He was able to manage the pain. Pain wasn't important. To you, pain is still important. Once you recognize that pain's not important, in fact, what pain is a signal. It's the body telling you something. Meditators do that a lot. They sit too long, their legs hurt, and they ignore the pain, which means they ignore the signal. And some of them even do great harm to their legs because they sit too long because they're not listening.
Ooh. Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah. So another point, and here's the point that you're kind of getting at, and that is that ignorance is bliss only until reality occurs. Like the bliss of you don't know that the lion is stalking, and now he's stalking. Okay. This is why the Buddha says, wake up and take a look, do an investigation.
Well, I can relate. This is where this is coming from. So I have this fear, and I don't. I've had it for years that someone's going to break into my house and kill me and kill my family. Right. Mm-hmm. And
all of that fear, and nobody's broken in and killed you yet.
I know. And you know, you see the TV, and you see the ads which say, you know, home invasions have increased and all this. Anyway, so I'll go to bed and I'll wake up at 2 a.m. and I'm like, I can hear something. There's someone around. Someone's coming into the house. And it happens. And I know.
Well, what would they steal?
I don't care about the stealing. I'm worried that they'll.
No. Listen to me. What is it that you are protecting that you don't want the thieves to get?
My family.
Well, they're not coming in to break into your house to get your family. They're breaking into the house to get. They don't want your family.
But I've conjured up this story that, you know, they hear us awake and then they come upstairs and they, you know.
But why did they didn't come into the house for the family? They came in the house for stealing stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it's like, you know, I spook them. They do something erratic. And the next minute.
Right. Well, instead of spooking them, why don't you set down on the front porch all of the stuff that you could think that they would want to steal and let them come steal it? And then you're happy. Then your family is safe.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, man, you make me laugh so much.
And why don't you then keep the stuff that you know they're not going to steal and be satisfied with that? How many gold bars do you have anyway?
Oh, I don't have any.
So they're not coming to steal your gold bars because you don't have any of those.
Yeah. Yeah. But it just goes back to the walking in the jungle. It's like, you know, if you're, as you said, if life is good enough, you're not worried about if you die, you die, you know, mm-hmm. then.
If they break in, they break in. But guess what? How many thoughts have you had of them breaking in?
Thousands, millions.
How many times have they broken in?
Zero.
So, looks like you've got it. You got a really interesting problem there. Why don't you turn that around? Because you're worried about something that never, in fact, that's what happens with most people. Most of the problems that you have in life never actually occur.
Yeah.
And this is just an example. You're afraid somebody's going to break in. Nobody broke in already. And look how much you wasted your mental efforts.
Yeah.
Okay. So why don't you have the other possibility of, oh, let's have a meal ready for them. Yeah. When they break in, come, you're an honored guest.
I've been waiting for you all these years.
I've been waiting for you and you haven't shown up. Where have you been? I have been waiting for you.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to put a plate out for them tonight.
Yeah, like milk and cookies for Santa
Claus.
Yeah,
like Christmas.
All right, so here's a story about that. And this is a story about the difference between feeling safe and secure and being fearless. All right, brave. Fearlessness is actually bravery. And and so this guy said, this guy is coming to kill you, back in the old days. So he puts his armor on, he girds his loins, he puts on the breastplate, he gets his axe out, and he goes tromping out there to have battle, right? He's brave. He is fearless. Why couldn't he have instead fixed lunch? So when that adversary that's in his mind comes, he can say, oh, you're my honored guest. Here, have something to eat. Now, that's real safety and security, that you're not actually afraid, which is different from having a danger and being brave about it. The reality is that it's not dangerous. In fact, the reality is girding his loins and putting on a breastplate and walking out or stomping out with a sword, he's creating the danger.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here you are giving yourself all of these dangerous thoughts and feeling unsafe and insecure. So the next time that you have a thought, you hear something go bump in the night, you can say, all right, let me go playfully investigate that because it's probably not somebody breaking in. If they are, I'll give them lunch.
Yeah.
And so the next time that you hear something go bump in the night, you'll remember that. Oh, well, let's go fix lunch.
And I think, you know, like this is the, that we live in a, you know, for some who are fortunate, they live in a world where, you know, we haven't seen a war, you know, for some people, for some human beings, they haven't witnessed or been part of a war since World War II. So, you know, the what you're saying is makes perfect sense, because, you know, you can go to the bank and still feel fear of the outcome. But then you look at the news and you see what's going on in Israel or, you know, in the Gaza. They have genuine fear.
Yes, but they've got genuine fear because they had disingenuous fear in the first place. Why did Hamas steal all of that cement to build tunnels? It's because they were already afraid. They were already greedy. They were already in a position of being a victim to the Israelis. That's why they started the war, when in fact they could have invited the Israelis in for lunch. But they
what about the general population? They live in
the general population is trained to see dangers where none exist.
Right.
Islam trains its people to see dangers where no danger exists.
Yeah.
Christianity trains their people to see dangers when in fact none exist.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
The reality is that there is no danger, but we can perceive danger, and therefore we gird up our loins and we go to battle. Okay? Every war starts with what's called a preemptive strike. You know what a preemptive strike is?
Yeah, so like in the, yeah, when they make a decision to instigate something.
Mm-hmm. Because it's dangerous. And we better get them first. That in fact, that's one of the version rule, the golden rule that Jesus gave. Do unto others the way that you expect them to do unto you, only do it first.
Is that from Jesus? I didn't know that.
No, he said a different golden rule, but that's the one that people hear.
Yeah.
His golden rule is to do unto others the way that you want to be treated. And Buddhism has even a better golden rule. And that is treat people the way they want to be treated, not the way you want to be treated. In fact, the joke is that it's Christmas time and the husband gives the wife a gift and the wife gives the husband a gift. The wife gives the husband pots and pans and a blender. And the husband gives his wife C-SPAN and panties. And that's the golden rule of Jesus, to give unto others what you want them to give to you. And the Buddhist term is to give unto others what they want, not what you want.
Yeah.
And all of this religious conflict is because they see danger in the other group rather than seeing familiarity in the other group. I mean, they both got a god, and neither one of them have a god that they can bring to battle. Yeah. They have to go to the temple to get their god to go to battle, and then the god is finished when he's in the temple.
But that fear that, you know, especially with children, who may not have the cognitive ability to understand what's going on, to experience that sort of conflict at such a young age, it'll live with them for the rest of their lives.
Parents traumatize their children. You heard of post-traumatic stress disorder? Every one of us has got post-traumatic stress disorder. We were stressed when we were kids. We got spankings, we were yelled at, we were not nourished. Do your homework. I'm going to beat your ass if you don't do your homework. Instead of, hey, would you like to do some homework now? It's going to be fun. I'll help you do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we were all traumatized into being afraid of things that are not worthy of being afraid of. And so people spend their whole lives in fear.
It's crazy.
And there is no danger.
It's crazy when you put it that way, that there is no fear, but we have, as a society, mankind has instilled it when it was never needed.
It was never needed. But it's passed down generation after generation. In fact, it's in the Bible that the sins of the fathers are visited upon the sons 7 generations. Guess what? It looks more like 1,000 generations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Generation after generation after generation, the children are taught tribalism. They're taught racism. They're taught danger. They're taught self-defense. And they're not taught friendliness.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And so the next time that you have the thought somebody's breaking into your house saying, hot dog, let's go have lunch. We've got a guest.
Yeah, you're right. It just goes back to the fear of losing. The fear of losing your life, the fear of death, the fear of attachment to your family, mm-hmm. seeing them go. You know, it all comes into play.
There's nothing to fear.
There's nothing anyway. And there's nothing I can do anyway. What am I going to do?
Be afraid.
That's all. Yeah.
And you spend all that time doing being afraid.
Wow. Wow.
And you don't even know what to do to prevent the fear, and so you just keep being afraid.
Well, I do. I've got a baseball bat underneath my bed.
Well, look at what they do in America is they go buy a gun.
Yeah.
If the gun's going to make them feel afraid. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why they buy the guns, because they're afraid.
And then you hear these horror stories of, like, kids getting in, you know, have just somehow they've got hold of the gun and they press.
Yeah, and then the kids get, guess what? The kids are afraid. That's why they want to play with the gun.
Mm. Yeah. So
the kids are already afraid. Daddy's afraid he bought the gun, and the kid's afraid the kid wants to play with the gun so that he can defend himself, and he winds up shooting his daddy.
But this fear is a very strong component of our society. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere, right? Now,
that's why we have passports. It's because of fear. If people weren't afraid, that's why we have jails. It's because we're afraid. That's why we have armies. That's why we have police. It's because our society is afraid.
And the thing is like the few people on this earth that can recognize that and still live in a state of happiness amongst all of that. But is this the reason why the Buddha, in his teachings, he wanted, and I don't know if this is correct or not, but he wanted, this was his last life, often hear that. It was his last life because
he realized it was his last life. He could see that it's his last life. Why? Because he kind of made the point, I ain't coming back here. Why should I come back to this place? I already been here. I've been there. I've done that. But I ain't coming back. I'll be happy dead.
But did he want that for everyone?
Well, wouldn't it be happier if people just recognized that they've already had enough crap? I mean, why to come back? Why would you come back unless you want more crap? If you don't want anything, you're not going to come back.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only reason why people would come back is because they want something. They're not done yet. But you're going to take revenge on the common machine for the last time it slapped them.
But that's out of your control, right? Like,
what I can control is how I feel about what happens that's not in my control.
I can't
control a lot of stuff.
Yeah, like I don't know when I'm going to die. I don't know how I'm going to go. I don't know if I'm going to come back again. All I know is what I know
now. Die happily.
Is to be, you know, what did you say? Sorry?
I don't know how I'm going to die. All I know is I'm going to die happily.
Yeah, yeah.
Been training for it. Been palming that card for years now.
Yeah.
Don't know when I'm going to die, but I'm going to die happily. What a relief. Gosh, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Goodbye, cruel world.
Yeah. That's a good goal to aspire to. At that moment,
it's a good thing to think right now. It's not a goal to aspire to. Now you want something you don't have. Why have goals? Instead, just say, yeah, you know, I'm going to be happy when I'm dead. I'm going to be happy to die.
Yeah.
And start having that thought right here, right now, that it's okay. You're going to die anyway. Your choice is how you're going to feel when you die.
Hmm. Yeah.
And so you can practice feeling good right now while you're still alive. And if you're really good at feeling good when you're alive, then while you're dying, you can still continue to feel good. And then in that last breath, you can say, oh, I feel good.
But yeah, but you know, there are times when, you know, you feel sick, or, you know, you might catch a cold, or you're not feeling great.
The body can be sick, but the mind does not have to be. In fact, this is a really good time to practice. When the body is sick, when there is pain, the mind can practice anapanasati. I can handle it. I'm okay. The body is sick, but the mind is not sick with the body.
In fact, the mind can
heal the body.
So when I was sick recently, my mind was like, you know, I feel like shit. I feel horrible.
Could change that thought then. And the new thought to have is, the body feels like shit. Ha ha, I don't. I'm okay. I'm just going to lay here in bed and let this body full of shit, or this full of COVID, just relax. I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to be gentle with the body. I'm going to lay and relax. My hip hurts. I'm going to lay down and relax and enjoy.
Yeah.
If the body is stuffed up and I can't breathe, I'm going to enjoy. At least I could breathe through the mouth. Maybe put some of that stuff in and get the wintergreen in. And it feels good now because I got this side freed up. Wow, it feels good to blow the nose, even when a bunch of grap is still in there.
That's where the mind, you can either go and wallow in your misery,
mm-hmm.
or you can get the mind to still be happy,
mm-hmm.
even though the body is sick.
Even when the body is sick, the mind can still be joyful and happy. The mind can take care of the body and give it medicine.
But you can still feel the pain.
But it's not pain, it's just talking. The body is talking. You can think of the word sensation. The body is being sensational. It's talking loudly. It's telling me, rest this part of the body.
Mm.
And so listen to the body. It's talking to you. But when you call it pain and then ignore the pain or suffer under the pain, no, let it be a message. Heed the message. Thank you, body, for giving me the message. We call it pain because we don't like it. The word pain is associated with feeling, vedana, emotion. Pain is not a sensation. A sensation can be sharp, dull, throbbing, itching, sharp, dull. Look at the way that we describe pains that way. Because, in fact, those are just sensations in the body.
So you have the sensation, but then when you label it as pain, that's when it becomes
dukkha. You don't like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you leave sensations as just sensations? Or do you have to hate it? Like, you didn't like being sick. Guess what? You're not liking being sick, just makes you more sick.
Yeah.
But when you're sick, you can say, hot dog, I got the day off. I'm going to lay in bed and nurture this body and give it everything it needs. Chilies and hot sauce and peppers.
Yeah. Hey, Damaretto, I probably should.
All right. We can finish now. This has been a delightful conversation, and I think that you've gotten so much out of it.
Definitely. Every time. And, you know, it's interesting because I know these things are, a lot of it is just thoughts that I've subdued that I just, you know, just wanted answers for. But as I've got the answers, it's like it just brings me back to the point of everything is good enough.
Yeah, back to reality. And the reality is things are good enough. The planet Earth is happy. I mean, humanity is quite a skin rash on the planet Earth, but the planet Earth will be okay.
Yeah. And I find sort of within, after 3 or 4 days, I start sort of going back to a few bit of the old patterns and
right, and that's so when catch I'm, that and say, aha, I see you, Myra. I see that old pattern coming back.
And that's when I go, well. And that's when I say, you know what? I need to give Damaretto a call. I don't know if that's
you need to, for yourself, just lighten up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell yourself a joke or two. I'm full of jokes. So I am a joke.
So how do you deal with the you know, like it was interesting watching those videos with you and Daniel Ingram and like, you know, he seems very, very serious and you know, very stoic in how he talks about, you know, and I'm like, but you know, you seem to know more about the Dharma, but you're able to talk about what we're here for. It was just really interesting watching you both speak, because.
Well, he's an Arahant. Listen closely to what he says.
I mean, that's the hell. I was like, wow. You know, for you, you know, to say that, and because ultimately, you can call it whatever you want. If you're not a lighter, happier person,
that's what enlightenment actually means: is that you're so light you just fly off into space.
And you know, the way that he was talking, I mean, the jhanas and the it sounded so complicated and. The elements of the earth, and I'm like, you know what, I'm sure it's got its place somewhere, but you know, I just want to know, you know, I just want to get to why the Buddha did all of this. Why did he do all this? Why did he?
Well, he was caught up in all of the stuff the same way everybody else was.
But you know, but more.
And he was the very best at it. He was the very best at flagellating. He was the very best at jhanas. He was the very best at whatever he did, and the very best wasn't good enough still for him.
Yeah.
Until he realized that's the problem. Why am I afraid of just being okay?
But he also, you know, he then went that next step further. To wanting
giving a flying rip.
Yeah. But also teaching people.
Yeah.
And like.
Spread the joy.
And he wanted to spread the joy.
Because nobody's going to get it. I understand exactly what he was saying, that this stuff is profound. This is stuff difficult for people to understand because they're so caught up in wanting things. They're caught up in their fear. They're caught up in their desire. They're caught up in their ill will. But the Buddha was right. They can come out of it.
Mm.
A few people at a time.
Yeah.
And now the civilization is such that Bhikkhu Buddhadasa was saying it's time for the noble teaching to come out of the closet. Let's make it widespread. It's not just for a very select few.
But you know, but the thing is, like, for a lot of people, if I, you know, for a lot of people who've invested, this is the part I find interesting, because it happened to me. I invested so much of my time into trying to figure it out that I waste, mm-hmm. you know, and then I thought,
yeah, okay, so I wasted my time. I wasted years of my time, but I'm having fun now.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I wasted all, never mind how old I am. I've wasted more time than anybody I know. In fact, I'm already older than everybody I ever met.
But you must come across people that invested so much of their time, they're not willing to shift.
Mm-hmm. They're not willing to let it go. Hard I tried.
Yeah, and now I'm going to validate what I've experienced.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know...
Yeah, and it doesn't mean a thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, no, thank you, Dharmarato. It's yeah.
I've got to see you later.
Yeah, definitely. I'll give you a call back in about a week.
All right. We'll see you, Ross.
All right. Take care of yourself. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
See you. Bye-bye.